Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tuesday night here with Suspense Radio. I am your host, John Robb. Tonight we are going to boil it over with author Karen Dion and her book, Boiling Point. And that book has just hit the shelves. It's going to be a great, exciting show. We got some other things coming up for you tonight. So 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio 2011 edition begins right now. Everybody, we are going to fire it up here tonight, and we're going to get some announcements out of the way. I hope everybody is excited about this show as I am. It's great to always have an author on here with a book that is exceptional and just excites you very much, which is what Karen Dion has done with Boiling Point. But our January magazine is out, and it is in the stores. We need to get it for subscription. You can email us. Go on our website, suspensemagazine.com. Check out Brad Metzler in that issue, along with some other great authors. We got some interviews in there. We also have some exciting things that are going to be coming up here February 1st. We're going to have Star Rihanna on the show with her next book, Deadly Decisions. We are going to start working on two authors for 2011 that are going to be on the show. Don't have dates and times yet on those. We were just told in 2010, back in, we've been talking about this since November, that we're going to be able to try to get them on here. One is Laurel K. Hamilton. The other is Stephen King. So you definitely want to make sure you stay tuned for that. A couple other things to talk about here. Joseph Bedell with his book Terror Cell is out on ebook. Go check that out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords, Borders, all the fun places you have your ebook reader out. Also, we have Steve Brewer with Babyface. His book is out on ebook form. Make sure you go and check that one out. Terry Ann Armstrong with Morning Menace, like I said. And then we have Scott Fadd with King of Nod. These are books here that we've all put out in ebook form by Suspense Publishing. Another great thing to go and check out, because ebooks are starting to become more of the wave of the future. If you didn't hear our show last week, it was our kind of year in review, year in preview. Allison Brennan was supposed to be on. She couldn't quite make it. She did email. She was very sorry she could not be on. We will reschedule that. We are not going to have a show this Friday because I'm actually going to go and take the weekend off. The family is going to go to the mountains. Am I going to ski? Probably not, because I do like my legs right where they are, and I'd rather not be in a cast for the next 6 weeks with some broken bones, especially legs or wrists or head, even though some people say that my head is already broken. But our writing contest is now underway here for 2011, and everything that you want to find out is on suspensemagazine.com. So what I want to do now is I want to get to our guest. She is the best-selling author of Boiling Point, which is out right now. Her previous book was called Freezing Point. Now get that one. So now she has boiled it over here with a volcano kind of suspense thriller, and I want to be able to bring her on to explain a little bit more about, you know, what's going on with her book. This is Karen Dion. Karen, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight at this late hour in the freezing cold of the East Coast, since it is not California. How are you doing?
Hi, John. I'm great. And yes, we are having a snowstorm right now in Detroit. Quite a bit different than what you were experiencing in California, for sure.
Yes. How many inches did you guys end up receiving? Because I got some family in Ohio and I can't get any information out of them. I don't know if they're snowed in.
Well, Detroit has maybe 4 inches on the ground right now, which for Detroit is a lot. Put it in perspective, I lived for 30 years in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. That's where I lived when I wrote Freezing Point, which is set in Antarctica. There, we would have 5 feet of snow on the ground. So this still doesn't seem like very much snow to me, but it's definitely nasty outside.
Right. You guys had 4 inches of snow in the Upper Peninsula in July in Michigan.
Yeah. Seriously, you can see snow in the woods in June up there. It's a different climate for sure.
But, you know, you kind of went the exact opposite with Freezing Point, and now you went to Boiling Point, and it was almost like the, you know, the cold miser and the heat miser in that fabulous, you know, The Year Without a Santa Claus, my favorite holiday movie of all time. So tell us a little bit about Boiling Point.
I'd be glad to. Boiling Point is an environmental thriller about an erupting volcano, a missing researcher, and a radical scheme to end global warming. That's the short tagline for the book. That scheme to end global warming centers on something called geoengineering or geohacking. You might have heard about it. What it is scientists are exploring various means of reducing the effects of global warming by permanently changing Earth's atmosphere. Now, I don't know how that sounds to you, but it sounds like the ultimate act of hubris to me. And when I first read about this, I thought, what a great thing for a villain in a thriller to be doing, because, you know, taking it upon himself, thinking that he's the one who is going to cure global warming for the Earth. Man has such a wonderful record of, getting it right that I just thought that was a great setting for a thriller. And one of the schemes that people are proposing, and these are just in the talk about stage, but to me just the fact that people are talking about it is extraordinary in itself. One of the schemes that they're talking about is deliberately seeding the atmosphere with sulfur dioxide particles to mimic the effect of a volcanic eruption. Most of your readers are, maybe if they're of a certain age, they'll remember when Mount Pinatubo went off some years back. The next year was called the Year Without a Summer because there were so many particulates in the air that blocked the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth, and it cooled the planet.
What part of the world was that volcano at? Because I don't remember. I remember about St. Helens when I was in fifth grade.
Yeah, this was maybe even a decade before, and in the Philippines. But there's what's called the Pacific Ring of Fire. That's all the way around the Pacific, through Indonesia, up through Japan, Alaska, down through
Compton,
where you live.
Yeah, it's right through Compton and Watts. We like to call that out here in L.A.
Exactly. Then all the way down into Chile, you know, so there's that huge arc of volcanic activity. And so I decided that my scientist is using a real volcanic eruption as a guise, and you know, that's what he's doing, seeding the atmosphere with even more sulfur, and that's what he's going to do to cure global warming.
Now, it's funny that you mentioned a talk about, you know, maybe manipulating the weather, because Jesse Ventura actually had a show called Conspiracy Theory. Don't know if you saw that. And one of his shows was actually about those massive amounts of electricity, or that area that they have, and I can't remember the name of it, where they can literally pump so much electricity in the air that supposedly scientists say they can actually move a storm cloud from where it's at and shift it to some place that actually might need rain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Right, and that's kind of, you know, and that's a scary thing. You know, they always make it sound like it's a great thing. Oh, well, you know, if it's not raining in the desert, we can make it rain and grow crops and things like that. Well, first of all, Mother Nature didn't want it to rain there for some kind of reason, and I wouldn't mess with it. But, of course, there's always a villain on the other side that figures, you know, just something, you know, corny, like in Superman 3, where he tried to do the same exact thing and had the satellite make all the weather and kill the coffee crop, and he ended up, you know, with the Richard Pryor becoming, like, you know, more of a billionaire. So it has been talked about, and now when you're talking about the volcanic thing, I mean, it just makes it even more, you know, scary to think that this could actually happen.
Yeah, and in the reality of it is, right now scientists are discussing these things as possibilities because many of the geoengineering proposals are not expensive, and there's something that, like, a corporation or a single government could put into effect. And so where they are right now in their discussions is they feel the need to discuss some sort of policy to at least consider this as a possibility. And what I think is interesting is when I got the idea for the novel, which was, let's see, December 2008 is when I got the idea. I was looking for a subject for the novel, and I Googled top environmental problems, and I came on an article that was titled 10 Wacky Ways to Save the Planet, and that's where I learned about geoengineering. But in the time that it took to write the novel and the novel hit the shelves, now scientists are saying, hey, maybe we should consider these things as a real possibility. So it's just kind of amazing to me how quickly what was pure fiction is nudging now towards fact.
Right. Now, Boiling Point is not a sequel to Freezing Point.
No, I call it a follow-up
right.
book.
They're standalones.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
yeah.
I just want people to know, because if they think, oh, well, it must be a sequel with maybe the same kind of villains or things moving forward, it's actually not a sequel. It's a standalone. So you can read both of them totally standalones.
Exactly. I wrote Freezing Point as a standalone. And then when I decided to write a follow-up environmental thriller, what I did was I took two of the secondary characters from Freezing Point and gave them a more major role in Boiling Point. And that was fun because, you know, it was like a new set of characters, but not quite. And I could use the events, the traumatic events that had happened in Freezing Point, because that's changed the characters and influenced how they think now in the second book, in Boiling Point. So if a person reads them in order, there's like a little extra layer of meaning, but they can easily be read separately, too.
Now, what made you decide to make the second book and bring the secondary characters in the second book, because a lot of people will go ahead and do two, you know, three, four before they maybe go back and explore a secondary character to kind of bring them back. What was your thought process behind that?
Well, I think for me, it was just simply more interesting for me as a writer to work with the secondary characters because I didn't know them as well as I did the main characters. And so I wanted to dig deeper and find out what they wanted and what drives them. And then thinking ahead, I hope to write a third point book. I have a proposal with my editor right now. And what the plan is to take two of the secondary characters, or one or two from Boiling Point, and do the same thing with them in Breaking Point. So, and then bring in a whole new cast of characters. So I think it'd be kind of a fun way to write a series that's not quite a series.
And now is... let me give everybody a website here first before I ask my next question. It's karen-dionne.com. We got to try to get that, get the person who has that website without the dash and give it up to them so you can get it. So
tell me about it.
So
I also
have
karendion.net. That also leads
you
to the same
you have
place.
That one. So
yeah.
Someone's just holding out on you just for the heck of it, aren't they? They're probably. Is anything actually up on that other website?
You know, for years there wasn't, but now there is, so I think I'm out of luck.
I tell you, yeah, now they're just trying to just piggyback off your success.
Have you ever heard of the idea, interrupting and completely off topic, of as a baby gift, giving the child their URL as a baby gift?
I've not heard of that one, but you know what? Nothing surprises me anymore.
Yeah, I thought, what a thing, you know, it's like you're marked from birth on, you know, so you'll have
yeah.
your website.
on the internet, and then you can do whatever you want because that's what the internet's all about. But your website, and like we were talking off the air, which is really great because, you know, a lot of authors don't do this. Your website is extremely in-depth and extremely informative, and that's what, you know, is so great because there's a lot of information instead of just having, you know, some authors come on, you see a book, and then you're like, well, you know, how can I contact, or you have a blog up there, you know, your bio, your books, your audiobook, everything is kind of up there, along with like the volcano video that you have up. So it's a great website for a lot of great resources. And the other thing is that a lot of people might not know that you are also involved with ITW.
Yes, that's right.
And that's a great organization that I talk up all the time, and I always tell any kind of aspiring writer or someone who has written a book and wants to get better or just a fan to definitely go and check out Thriller Fest because it's one event, and I interviewed Steve Barry and David Morrell about this also, is that it's one event that you that every writer or aspiring should go to at least once to get the you know, the full effect of, you know, being able to have all those great authors in one setting and be able to really, you know, get inside their head, which you can never really do all at one time.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've actually been to every single Thriller Fest, and I would never, never miss it. It's the must-go-to conference for me, as far as I'm concerned. And it's exactly what you say. The established authors, the big names, are so accessible. And they might be on a panel with three or four other authors. It's not like each one is a rock star. They are to their fans. But, you know, they're so down to earth the way they act and behave. And if you want to talk to them, you can go up afterwards and you know, chat with them like you would anybody. It's just fabulous.
And so was Thriller Fest your inspiration for the Backspace Writers Conference, which you also have in New York City? This year it's May 26th through the 28th.
You know what's interesting is Backspace and ITW came about at roughly the same time. My business partner, Chris Graham, and I started Backspace in April of 2004. And the very first meeting that was had at BoucherCon in Toronto to discuss forming ITW was that fall, that October. And I wanted to attend that meeting. I happened to be at BoucherCon promoting Backspace as a new organization for writers of all genres. And I heard about the meeting, and it was only open to published thriller authors. And at that time, I was not yet published, so I couldn't be a part of it. But I wanted to be a part of it ever since I first heard of it. I joined as an associate member, and then once I got a publishing contract, I changed that membership. That was one of the first things I did, was change it to an author membership. But Backspace and ITW have a lot of overlap. Backspace was formed with the idea of writers helping writers. So you don't have to be a published author to be a member. And as I said, you can join, and we're in all genres. And the core of the group is the discussion forums that we have on the internet. Backspace has about 1,400 members in a dozen countries right now, which is roughly the same size as ITW.
Right.
And but some of our early supporters were David Morrell and Lee Child and Gail Linz, and they've all come to our Backspace conferences multiple times. They've been guest speakers at the discussion forums online. So they recognized what we were trying to do, help other writers succeed, and that was their motivation, too, in really forming ITW as well.
Well, you got to give me information on how Suspense Magazine could be a part of Backspace Writers Conference, because we always love to, you know, help any kind of conference we can that, you know, helps the literary community and keeps writers writing, because in today's day and age, it's so difficult, you know, for writers to keep writing instead of having to keep marketing, because there's so much little money with publishers in trying to market books and get things out there. You're having to do almost, you know, more of that than you are actually being able to sit down and create stories.
Oh, it's so true. And it's really difficult to find the right balance between the two. But we would love to have you be a part of our conference.
Yeah.
We'll definitely exchange some information on that. That sounds super.
Right. Yeah, because we'll be at Thriller Fest, definitely out there. And, you know, I don't know what we have going on in May, and maybe we can, you know, we got family in New York City, and I'm sure my family wouldn't mind going to, you know, New York twice. You just never know.
Sounds fabulous. Backspace is the same week as Book Expo, and so we always piggyback onto that because Book Expo brings some authors into town that wouldn't ordinarily be there, and then sometimes we can twist their arm and they can come over and help us out with the conference too.
So now you mentioned that you're doing Breaking Point. Now, is this going to be another kind of environmentally thriller book, or is it going to be something way differently off base?
I'm not sure if I should say the idea because my editor hasn't bought the project yet. But I guess I can say yes, it would be another environmental thriller, and it takes place in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, so some kind of earthquake, tsunami kind of thing.
Kind
maybe
of sounds thinking. Like it could be.
You know,
doesn't
it could
it?
Be something to do with water. Maybe water. So you have the idea working on it, and you know, just let people know also, because a lot of authors listen to this. What does it mean when you say your editor has not bought the idea? Because a lot of authors kind of feel like, well, if they have a contract, they can kind of, you know, write whatever they want because they have those deals. So what does that mean?
Well, my situation, backing up, Freezing Point was purchased as a standalone novel, so it was a single book contract. It was not, you know, going to be a series. And so after Freezing Point published and it was doing well, I sent a proposal to my editor, basically a one-page description of what Boiling Point would be, and she bought the book before it was written. So then I had, again, just a single contract for Boiling Point. Interjecting just briefly, it was very cool to have her bought the book before I wrote it, because that enabled me to take a research trip to the volcano where the book is set. So, you know, I was able to bring a lot of authenticity to the writing. So right now I have another one-page proposal for a third story idea. And she's had that on her desk for a little while, but, you know, the market is tough. She wants to see how Boiling Point does in the market before she decides if there'll be a third book. So if anybody wants a third book from me,
let's go get Boiling Point.
Support the new one. Yeah.
Otherwise, you might get to your Breaking Point. So, yeah, but, you know, but that's very interesting because I haven't quite heard it that way where, you know, it's not like they signed you up for, you know, two or three because it was based, because some people base it off of, okay, yeah, we love this character. We want to sign this character up for, you know, three books. And that's what you hear a lot of authors. And sometimes they just keep going and going. And I think after like six of them, they're just collecting the checks and they're not actually, you know, using their brain and writing anymore. Now it's just becoming, they're just putting words on a page and just keeping the character going. Yours is a little bit different because yours is not actually character driven, but story driven.
Right. And the downside to doing it this way, rather than having a two or three book deal, is there's a longer time between books. It's actually a little over 2 years between Freezing Point and Boiling Point. So for a series, usually you're expecting to see a book a year from your favorite author. 2 years is a long time to wait. So stretching it out a little bit like this has its downside, but I like this. I like the idea that each book is related but can also stand alone too.
Well, what I like the idea also is that there's not a lot of environmentally thrillered, you know, books out there. I mean, you're kind of leading a charge where, you know, you can kind of, you know, Steve Barry's mentioned many times that if it wasn't for Dan Brown, he probably wouldn't be as popular with the historical fictions. And then all the people now writing about the Knights Templars, you know, with National Treasure and all that stuff coming out, all of a sudden you saw all that things all over the place. Stephanie Meyer with the Twilights, now all you see are vampires. So you're kind of spearheading possibly a new, you know, a new genre here with more of the environmental aspect of things instead of more of the historical aspect.
Right. It's definitely a newer subgenre for thrillers, but I can see it growing. I actually owe my publication to Al Gore. Would you like to hear the story?
Oh, I got to hear the Al, because I'm sure he's going to take credit for it.
Anybody know him? Maybe we can get an endorsement.
You never know. I might have to call him. I might have to try to get a hold of his publicist and, or whatever and say, Al, I would like to have you on because maybe we can get the two of you on and talk about this and say, hey, this is why. This is why. Oh, that'd be hilarious if I could pull that one off.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. Well, here's how it went. I wrote Freezing Point in thinking of it as a techno thriller, you know, copying, I admire Michael Crichton's work, you know, so
right.
It was like that. And by the time we were ready to, my agent and I were ready to send it on submission to editors, techno thrillers were out of vogue. So we recast it as an environmental thriller because it has a strong environmental theme. And in July of 2006, my agent sent it out to maybe 15 editors. And we quickly started getting rejections, as happens. And many of the rejections were because the book was an environmental thriller. Now, remember, this was July 2006.
Right. And nobody was doing anything about them.
Right. Some of the rejections said, environmental thrillers haven't done well for us in the past. Another rejection was, maybe if this was by an established author, we'd take a chance on this. And one rejecting editor wrote, and I've never forgotten it, she says, I actually read this whole book. Imagine that, me, a self-professed non-fan of eco-thrillers, eco-thrillers, I guess I'm supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck on eco. Okay, so we thought, well, all right, the book is done. 2 months' time, we had rejections from all of the editors, we thought. I started writing another book because that's what authors do.
Right.
And then the next January, so 6 months later, completely out of the blue, I was in a bookstore, perfect, right? My agent calls with the news that we had an offer from Berkeley. And sorry, I got stuck for a second. So, we had the offer from Berkeley, and, you know, very nice offer, really excited. But the difference is Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth had come out the previous November.
Uh-huh.
And I really think that that was a factor. I think if my editor had gotten around to reading the book sooner, you know, perhaps she would have rejected too, you know, along with all the other editors, because the bad pun time, the climate wasn't right for eco-thrillers.
And, you know, and I understand that publishing is a business, and, you know, the business is to make money the same way it's in the movie business or things like that. But when you get a letter from an editor that says, wow, imagine this, I'm not even an, you know, eco, you know, thriller person, and I read the book all the way from the cover, why wouldn't they go to bat instead of having to sit there and say, you know, well, we need to have something to bring it out, instead of saying, no, we're going to bring it out. And, you know, if they put enough marketing behind it, it'll sell, and it could, like I said, it could start the chain reaction.
Yeah, it can be really an author, you know, they say he has to have a thick skin, but you also have to be pretty resilient as far as disappointments, because the business is just full of it, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now, did you ever consider, now that today's day and age is, you know, e-books are so big and you can put them out there on your own and this and that, did you ever maybe have the thought, and maybe it was a little before the time to do that, that you might go that route and get it out?
I didn't at the time, but I would definitely consider it now. You know, things are changing so fast in publishing, and I'm looking at some of these writers who are technically making more money at their ebooks than they would have if they had published them with a traditional publisher, and it's a very enticing idea.
Well, you see your friend David Morrell, what he did with The Naked Edge, and saying
that's right.
And he did it under David Morrell Books. He did it kind of on his own. He's like, I'm doing it on my own. Why do I need a publisher to put an ebook out there?
Exactly. And, you know, especially for an author who already has a reputation, it's definitely something to consider. I don't know if you saw the figure, but I was reading that Barnes and Noble sold something like 1 million ebooks on Christmas Day.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, I think that's why Borders is really looking at possibly just getting rid of their stores and having them an online store like Amazon. I'd have to say Amazon does pretty well beating out Barnes & Noble and Borders, and you don't have any storefront you can go to, not even in Seattle where it started. There's no place to go. You know,
yeah.
But I think they still live in their same little two-bedroom apartment that they started it from, the guy from Amazon. But again, there's no storefront. So why do you need a storefront when Amazon's doing so well? Why does Barnes & Noble and Borders need a storefront? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if they do or not anymore. Maybe that's the way it will change.
Of course, the idea of e-books was around for a long time. but it wasn't until we had, you know, the devices to read them on that it really made a big difference. So
right, and now we have a lot of them.
Yeah, very exciting to see where that's going. Although I have to admit that there's just nothing like going into a bookstore and walking over to a shelf and seeing a book that you wrote on the shelf. That is such a fabulous experience. I would definitely miss that if I came out only an ebook.
Right, and my wife and I have this discussion all the time, and I know she's listening now, is that I would much rather have electronic than print, just for the simple fact of ease, environmentally much more appealing. Let's save some trees here. And the simple fact of, yeah, like, a, you know, instant gratification, getting it. And, you know, if you get a book that's $2.99 and it might not be that good, you're not out anything. Instead of having to drive out to a store and go pick it out and then come back and get it, and then you have all these books sitting around your house and you're not really doing anything with them or giving them out to libraries or anything else like that. You know, they're all in one nice little e-book reader, what I call, for a lot of women and whatnot, why not do the Martha Stewart organizational thing and have all your books in one little e-book thing?
Absolutely. I mean, that is such a strong argument. And from a publishing standpoint, typically, a publisher will be happy if an author's book has a 50% sell-through. That what that means is if half the books that are printed actually sell.
Right.
Well, the waste then, you know, of those other 50% of the books that don't sell, you know, they either are remaindered and sold for a dollar somewhere or they're destroyed. And, you know, for an environmentalist looking at that, thinking, oh, my goodness, this is terrible. At least it can go back into some other form of paper, but it's like, oh, wow, what a waste, paper and ink.
And the books might be 50%. The magazine, you are highly successful if you sell through 30%.
Wow.
So imagine that. And,
yeah.
And that goes to show, how many times do you walk through, is People Magazine ever sold out? They're the number one magazine, and you can always find 150 copies at your grocery store. It seems like no one ever buys them because it's always full.
That's true.
Yeah, so, I mean, what's going on with all the waste of that? And they're a weekly magazine, so think of all the waste that happens with those kinds of magazines, too. But, yeah. So, everybody, Karen's got to go to bed because it's 10:30 in Detroit, and the book is Boiling Point. The website is Karen. -DIONNE.com. Remember the dash because someone stole her other one. And go out and get the work Boiling Point right now. And you can also, if you're close to Utica, Michigan, January 15th at 2 o'clock, you can see her at that Borders bookstore. And you might want to go because that Borders might not be there next January. So definitely want to check out the events that she's going to be at. So Karen, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It has been great talking with you, and hopefully we will see you here in the next couple months for, you know, in New York.
Oh, absolutely, and we'll talk about Backspace too. Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. Worth staying up for.
Fabulous, yes, and, you know, since, you know, Detroit sports isn't that great right now, what else did you have to do tonight?
Watch Detroit 187, of course.
Oh, there you go. Well, go enjoy the snow, because I'm not going to.
Okay.
So. Thanks so much, Karen. Have a great night.
Thank you.
So again, everybody, that was Karen Dion, and her book is Boiling Point. It's not a sequel, standalone to her previous book, Freezing Point. Again, the website is karen-dionne.com to check it out. It's available at all bookstores, along with Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, borders.com. Also, the audiobook is on audible.com, so you can definitely make sure, you know, that you check that out. It is great to know, again, that we can, you know, see all the changes that are coming, and now to talk to an author tonight to have a new, great, different genre in the, you know, environmental thrillers that are coming out, which is, you know, definitely something that's changing, because suspense and thrillers already have so many, you know, different changes and different places to go. It's great to see, you know, pushing the envelope here into, you know, a new aspect of exactly, you know, what, you know, thriller can be. You know, you kind of look back, you can kind of see the Tommy Lee Jones and H movie Volcano. Then they had Dante's Peak that came out, kind of the same thing, talking about those environmental movies, you know, and the thrillers about, you know, the Next Day of Tomorrow, or whatever that was, with Dennis Quaid and all these movies about, you know, the global warming and what's going to happen. So it was great to have Karen on to talk about Boiling Point. And again, you definitely want to make sure you check that book out. The website for us is suspensemagazine.com. It's great to know that our January magazine is out, and you can go pick that up. I suggest that you go and order a subscription here from our website at suspensemagazine.com. Hit order the magazine. Get it delivered right to your house. Why wait? Why go out and, you know, go to a bookstore just in case it might not be there, sold out already in the Barnes & Nobles? And we will say that Borders is not going to carry it, because something is going on with Borders, that they are not taking any new magazines, and they are cutting back on theirs. So they have declined to carry Suspense Magazine. So I will say that, you know, heck, I mean, if they're not going to help us out, you know, why help them out? So order straight from us here on suspensemagazine.com. You'll get the magazine right into your hands before anybody else. If you want the electronic edition, you know, you can get that too. You can also get 4 free electronic issues within the right to your email address. It's available. You know, you can get it on, you know, your iPads. It's a PDF form. You can read it. It's fully interactive. It's a great thing to do. We put our magazine up on barnesandnoble.com and amazon.com for all the readers out there, the iPads, iPhones, anything you want to do, you'll be able to read the magazine. A couple more plugs I'd like to give out is, you know, one of our contributors, Scott Nicholson, is hauntedcomputer.com. Scott has been an amazing author for many years. He does a lot of great work on indie stuff. You want to make sure you go check that out. We have Donald Allen Kirch out there with Manchester House. He does a great article every month in the magazine Stranger Than Fiction. It is something that is always a little bit offbeat, a little different, because it's kind of one of those urban legend true stories that are, is it true, is it not true? And Donald Allen Kirch does a great job of writing for us every month on that front. Tiffany Coulter does another great job as your writing coach, and you want to make sure you check out her article in the magazine. Joseph Bedell with his book Terror Cell, Steve Brewer with his book Babyface, Scott Fadd, The King of Nod, Starina, In the Name of Revenge, Terry Ann Armstrong with Morning Menace. All these great authors are available for you to get up on your readers in Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, Smashwords, and you know, you can pick up those books. Great price. Get them now while they're hot. Starina is going to be on February 1st to talk about her next book, Deadly Decisions. And I know that we're probably going to have Terry on for her second book. I haven't scheduled that one yet for probably afternoon. I'm not sure what the name of the book is because it changes, so I'm not going to give it. But I do know that her second book is going to be coming out. Again, there will be no show on Friday, but you can go back and listen to all the archive shows here on Blog Talk Radio - Suspense Magazine. And another great show that's on here is that we were on this show a couple weeks back. They do a great job of talking about, you know, different horror movies and a lot of movies and things that are coming out. We were, I think, on their second show, and you can kind of listen to our interview this. But it's called The Gruesome Gossip, and I want you to take a little clip and listen to this. Great show. Again, we were on there. They talk a lot about some great old movies, new movies that are coming up with horror. So if you're into the horror scene, I definitely say that you should check out Gruesome Gossip Radio Show here on Blog Talk. So everybody, I'll tell you what, it's been a great show. We're going to go ahead and, you know, we're going to call it a night tonight for everybody out there. Again, if you have anything that you want to talk to us about, you can always email us at editor@suspensemagazine.com. Check out our contact page if you have any questions about anything at all. We are extremely, you know, easy to get a hold of, and we will always answer anybody back that has anything to do. If you know an author, if you are an author, you want us to kind of check out your book, We can't guarantee that we will review everything. I want to make sure that you know that. We will try to get to everything that we can, but we receive so many books all the time that we, you know, we only have so many eyes to be able to get through everything. So please, you know, if you have sent stuff in, you know, be patient. We will announce the contest winners for 2010. We will not notify everybody because we receive thousands of submissions, and we just can't go back and notify anybody that did not win. So we will only announce the winners of that contest. So if you're emailing me, and I get a lot of emails, did I win, did I win, did I win, you will all find out. We will have it on our website. We will have it in the magazine. You know, we'll definitely probably blog about it. We'll probably put it up on Facebook that it's available and, you know, tweet it. I'm on the tweet deck. I'm on the Twitter thing and everything. I got so many things going on, I don't even know half the time if I'm in the car or if I'm in my house. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining us tonight. It's been a great night here talking with everybody, especially with Karen Dion and her book, Boiling Point. That's Karen-Dionne.com. Check it out, suspensemagazine.com. We are here for you and all that is suspense, mystery, thriller, horror. Good night, everyone. We will see you all next week. Have a splendid afternoon or evening. I don't know where that came from. See you later.